Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashberry. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1328, your monthly classic show, brings you three stories by longtime contributor Adam Giles. Tonight's writer, Adam Giles, has been a frequent contributor to Life Rattle since he first appeared on the program in June of 2001. In 2006, he took on the role of occasional producer when this show was aired on Ryerson radio station, CKLN. Giles was born the older of two boys in 1978 in Mississauga, where he grew up. He completed 5 years of study at the University of Toronto at Mississauga, where he served as editor-in-chief for the campus newspaper. He went on to earn a postgraduate diploma in journalism and new media. Giles has written for the web, for several print publications, for CTV Newsnet, and he read his short story, Christine, on CBC Radio 1. Adam Giles is one of our truly classic Life Rattle writers. He brings us everyday situations, but with a clarity and brevity that take us right into the room with him. The Life Rattle style is often about what is left out, that part of the story and scene that is not fed to us or interpreted for us, but rather inspired by what we are told. Giles's writing is a prime example of the beauty of this style. We get all we need to know with strong, sparse dialogue and visuals that keep us in the scene without dominating our perception. We are free to associate our own experience through his. The three stories you will hear on this podcast are seemingly simple, but take us far into moments of complexity in the backstory that is inferred. So let's listen now as Adam Giles reads his first story, $5 Rebate, here on Life Rattle. And you're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And remember, Life Rattle stories often contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive. So listener discretion is advised.
$5 Rebate by Adam Giles. Monday, March 11, 2002. My three waffles pop out of the toaster. I touch the top of one. The hot waffle stings my finger, and I jerk my hand back. I pluck them out of the toaster, drop them on my plate, and rub my fingertips together. I squirt maple syrup all over them, grab a knife and fork, and carry my plate to the kitchen table. I sit across from my mom, who wears her beige, thick-framed reading glasses. She holds a piece of paper at arm's length and frowns an open-mouthed frown as she reads from it. "Stupid thing," she says. I stab my fork into one of the waffles, slice a piece off, and eat it. "Hmm?" "It's got the address all screwed up here." She flashes me the piece of paper. The top of the paper reads, "Quick Tax 2002, $5 rebate." "Why would they put the department above the company name and the address?" she continues. I chew and shrug. She sighs and shakes her head. She places the piece of paper beside a blank envelope on the table in front of her, holds it steady, and picks up her pen. She copies the address onto the envelope, holding her finger on the piece of paper and reading aloud as she writes, "Corporate Headquarters, Intuit, 2535 Garcia Avenue, Mountain View, California, 94043, USA. When she finishes writing, she looks back at the piece of paper and rereads the address aloud as she follows her finger line by line across the address on the envelope. Corporate Headquarters, Intuit, 2535 Garcia Avenue, Mountain View, California, 94043, USA. I cut off another piece of waffle and eat it. My mom peels a piece of tape from the tape dispenser and sticks a small piece of cardboard onto another piece of paper. "This is really stupid," she says. "They want you to send in the proof of purchase, and here I was looking for a barcode or something, when it turns out to be this tiny little thing on the side of the box. I could barely read the writing on the silly thing. I mean, it's so small. It could get lost so easily. What if it gets there and it's gone? They can just say, 'Where's your proof of purchase?' and tell you you're shit out of luck. Well, they're not going to lose this one." She tapes all four sides of the proof of purchase and grabs the stapler and drives a staple through the top. She looks at me and waves the paper with the proof of purchase attached. "And they make you fill out this questionnaire about their product," she says. My dad walks into the kitchen, smoke rising from the cigarette in his hand. My mom turns to him. "This is almost ready to go. Did you want to fill in this part here about your email address?" she asks him. My dad walks to the fridge and opens the door. "What? Do you want to give them your email address? They're asking for it in this questionnaire." "No, they'll just be bugging me and trying to sell me things." "Okay," she says, and she slips the questionnaire with the proof of purchase into the envelope. "You want to look this over before I mail it out?" My dad pours himself a glass of milk, drinks it all in one gulp, burps, and shakes his head. He puts the glass down on the counter and walks out of the kitchen. My mom licks the envelope and seals it. "Okay," she nods. "That's one less thing to do. I like getting things out of the way so I don't have them hanging over my head." I chew and nod. She gets out of her chair, puts the envelope on the counter, rests her hands on her hips, raises a finger in the air, and walks out of the kitchen. I smear the last piece of waffle around my plate to clean up the pool of syrup and lift it to my mouth. I chew it and swallow it. I get up, place the knife and fork on my plate, and rest my plate in the sink. I walk out of the kitchen.
That was Adam Giles reading his story, $5 Rebate. Giles' next story is titled Jack Brown.
Jack Brown, by Adam Giles. A skinny man sits next to me in the fracture clinic waiting room at Humber River Memorial Hospital. He wears a sky blue fisherman's hat and a blue golf shirt. Black framed glasses stick out of his breast pocket. Gray slacks hug his bony legs. The woman behind the counter peers out and calls, "Number 3? I look at the piece of plastic in my hand. Number 20. I reach into my school bag and pull out a book called Building Better Plots. I open it and remove my bookmark, a folded piece of scrap paper, and I read. I finish the last few pages of Chapter 6 and turn the page to Chapter 7, creating characters and backstory. The woman behind the counter calls Number 4. I tune her out and read. One way to create compelling drama is to take ordinary people and put them into unusual circumstances. The reason these stories work so well is that the protagonist's ordinariness make him relatable and thus interesting for the audience, which is itself made up of lots and lots of ordinary people. The woman behind the counter calls number after number as I read. The audience is left to wonder what they would do in similar extraordinary circumstances. And the protagonist's eventual triumph over these circumstances is reinforcing and reaffirming to the audience. I close my book, marking my place with my finger. I look over at the counter. The number-calling woman is gone. I yawn and stretch my arms. "Studying?" asks the skinny man next to me. I look at him. "Yeah," I smile. His teeth are yellow but straight. He presses his lips together and smiles. "I remember that. I may be old, but I still remember studying. What are you taking?" "Writing. Writing in English." I look at his pale white hands dotted with faint brown spots. He doesn't have a number. "Are you waiting for an appointment?" He smirks. No, I'm waiting for my wife. Oh, I'm here for my shoulder. I see, he says. I've had problems with my hip, and I have osteoporosis. I've had a few hip replacements. I have bad knees, too. I come in every 3 months for a needle. That's for the osteoporosis. I come in for the needle, and they stick it right here. He points to his upper thigh, then looks around, faces me, cups his hand beside his mouth, and whispers, "The needles cost $1,000, but I don't have to pay for them. I have health coverage that pays for them." I smile. "Good, that's a lot of money." He leans forward and glances at my book. I angle it so he can see the cover. "Where do you go to school?" he asks. "The University of Toronto, but this book isn't really for school." His lips part and his eyes open wide. "I went to the University of Toronto. That was a long time ago." "Really? What did you take?" "Everything. I took everything." I smile. "A jack of all trades, eh?" He nods. "I finished school in 1938, and then I worked for a while. I did statistics for a company that sold big, big machinery." "Was that in Toronto?" "Yep, it was at Bay and Wellesley. But that was only for a little while, because the war started soon after. They started enlisting all of the 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds into the Navy and the Air Force. You know how I joined?" I shake my head. "One day a parade of 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, who were already enlisted, crossed in front of the building I was working in. My boss said, 'Sorry, we won't be needing you anymore,' so I went outside and enlisted in the Air Force." I smile. "Wow." He nods. "I went over with a squadron from Edmonton. We flew to England, believe it or not, on D-Day. Where we landed, there weren't many airports, so they sent dozens of us out to chop down wheat fields. We chopped and chopped until there was enough space for our planes to land and take off." "Number 20, the woman behind the counter calls. I turn my head. "Oh, that's me." "Oh, okay," he says. "It was nice to meet you. My name's Adam," I say, extending my arm. We shake hands, and he says, "It was nice to meet you. My name's Jack, Jack Brown." I drop my book into my bag, get up, and walk over to the counter. "Good luck with your studies, and good luck with your shoulder," he says. "Thank you." I smile and nod at Jack Brown. He smiles back. I walk over to the counter. "You can go right in," the woman says, pointing to the hallway around the corner. "Thanks." I walk around the corner, and a nurse points me to a bed. I sit down, and she places a clipboard full of papers beside me. "Dr. Zarnett will be with you in a minute," she says. I glance at the first page on the clipboard while I wait. My full name, Giles Adam David, appears above my address, phone number, and health card number at the top. I try to make out words from the scribbled paragraph in the middle of the page. The only ones I can read are left shoulder and arthroscopic surgery. Dr. Zarnett approaches me. "How are you doing?" "Not bad." He picks up the clipboard and leafs through a few pages. "Shoulder, right?" I nod. "The left one?" "Yeah." "And it's been, what, 5 weeks since surgery?" "Yep." "You're the football player, right?"
"Hockey."
"Right. Okay, David, why don't you book an appointment for physiotherapy and come back and see me in 6 weeks?"
"That's it?"
"Yep, just go back out the way you came in and tell the nurse behind the counter 6 weeks."
"Okay."
I hop off the bed and walk out to the waiting room. Jack Brown talks to an elderly woman sitting next to him.
"Can I help you?" asks the woman behind the counter.
"Yeah, Dr. Zarnett says I need to come back in 6 weeks."
"Okay," she says as she leafs through the day timer in front of her. I turn and look at Jack Brown. He still faces the woman sitting next to him.
"Here you go," the woman behind the counter hands me a business card. It says August 27, 12 o'clock p.m.
If unable to keep appointment, please give 24 hours notice. Sorry, it's going to have to be 8 weeks. Dr. Zarnett is going to be on vacation in 6 weeks, she says. I nod. I turn away from the counter. I look back at Jack Brown. I wave. He looks up and he smiles and points at me. He and the woman next to him wave back. I turn and walk down the hall, out of the hospital, to my car.
That was Adam Giles reading his story, Jack Brown. Let's hear his last story, titled Headache.
Headache by Adam Giles. I sit at my computer and stare at my new blank document in Microsoft Word. I tap my fingers gently on the keyboard as I think about the independent writing assignment I have due tomorrow and the 48-page assignment for my English course that I haven't started yet. The phone rings. Hello? Is Adam Giles there, please? Speaking. Hello, Adam. It's Chuck Havel calling. Oh, hey, how are you? Not too bad. I've got the audit more or less finished, but there are a few things I'm going to need from you. Okay. I'm going to need some more details about the GST entries in the Medium's general journal. I'll also require any other information you can give me on accounts receivable. For example, anything the Medium has collected this fiscal year that applies back to receivables incurred last year. Other than that, though, the Medium's financial statements are almost ready to go. Okay. Yeah, so if you could get all that stuff to me by tomorrow or the next day, that would be greatly appreciated. Okay, I'll see what I can do. Thanks, Adam. Have a good day. Yeah, you too. I hang up the phone. I rub my forehead. Now I'm going to have to go to the Medium office tonight. The Medium is the University of Toronto at Mississauga's student newspaper. I am the editor-in-chief. I look back at the blank screen in front of me. Three pounding knocks shake my bedroom door. Yeah? I call. The door opens. My dad walks in and hands me two envelopes. I didn't know you applied to these places, he says. I take the envelopes and look at the logos in the corners. Ryerson University and Sheridan College. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. What programs did you apply to? Journalism. At each place? Yeah, plus Humber. And then I applied to the publishing program at Centennial. Hmm. Well, good luck. My dad closes the door. I open the Ryerson envelope. They sent a supplementary application questionnaire, asking for my name, educational history, employment experience, 3 references, $45 more, and an explanation why I chose the journalism program. It read, "Briefly describe what influenced you to select your area of study and why you are considering Ryerson, as well as any factors/details you believe are relevant that we should consider when reviewing your application. If you require more space, please feel free to add additional paper." I shake my head and open the Sheridan envelope. They want a covering letter, a professional resume, 3-page autobiographical essay, and an outline of my professional life goals. I turn the page over and see a long list of questions. Name 2 of your favorite news personalities and indicate why they are your favorites. Describe a professional crisis you've been involved in and how you overcame it. I toss the Sheridan letter on top of the Ryerson one and look back at the blank screen in front of me. The phone rings. Hello? Hello, Adam. Mohammed Mirza. I got your message from the other day. Sorry, I couldn't call you back right away. Things have just been crazy for me, man. What's up? Yeah, I just wanted to know when you'd be able to come into the office to reconfigure the network. The call waiting beep interrupts me. Mr. Mirza, can you hold on for a second? I've got another call. Sure. I click over to the other line. Hello? Hey, Adam, it's Tammy. How are you? Good. How's it going? Well, I'm downtown right now, and there are no copies of the paper at Robarts, Sid Smith, or Harthouse.
What?
Yeah, I checked Harthouse.
At the porter's desk? I ask.
Yes, and Jan was at Robarts and Sid Smith, and he said there were none there either. I run my hand through my long hair. I'm growing it long because I'm playing ball hockey this semester, and my helmet is too loose on my head if I have short hair. That reminds me, I have a ball hockey game in 2 days, and I haven't gone for a run in a while. Okay, I'll deal with that later. I've got Mr. Mirza on the other line about the computers.
Oh, really? When's he coming in?
Don't know. I'm about to find out. Okay, I'll talk to you later, Tammy says. Yeah, say hi to Jan.
I will.
Oh, he wants to know when the next ball hockey game is.
Thursday.
Okay, talk to you later.
Yeah, bye.
I push the call waiting button.
Mr. Mirza?
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Okay, how are you for tomorrow?
That should be okay.
What time?
How about 9:30, he says.
In the morning?
Yeah, so what do we need to do?
Get the new computer on the network, install the software, hook up the scanner. Anything else?
Yeah, we have to reformat the computer that had the virus on it.
Right, he says.
Okay, so I'll come by the medium in the morning, and we'll work until we get everything up and running.
Sounds good.
Okay, Adam, how's everything else? How are your classes going?
I look at the blank screen in front of me.
Good.
Good. All right, I'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 then.
Didn't we say 9:30? I ask.
Yeah, between 9 and 9:30.
I yawn.
Okay.
Bye, Adam.
Bye.
I hang up the phone and tap my fingers gently on the keyboard as I think about my writing assignment due tomorrow and the 48 pages worth of shit I'm going to have to write for my English course. My brain throbs. My bedroom door swings open and my dad pops his head in.
I forgot to ask you, he says. Did you ever talk to that computer guy?
Yeah, he's coming into the office tomorrow to fix up some stuff there.
Did you ask him yet?
Not yet, he's really busy. I don't think he'll be able to do it anytime soon.
Well, can we do it ourselves? It's not really fair that you've got the internet in your room and your brother doesn't.
I don't think I want to be fooling around with that stuff. It's a lot more than just hooking up a hub and a few cables. You've got to order extra IP addresses from Rogers and do all this reconfiguring on each computer to set up the network.
Well, we've got to get it done.
Okay, but I really don't have time to think about it right now.
My dad nods and pulls my door shut. I take one more look at my blank screen before I reach for the remote control and find the Leaf game on TSN. I turn off my computer, lean back in my chair, and watch the Leafs play the New Jersey Devils. I watch Matt Sundin skate up the ice with the puck and pass it to Darcy Tucker. Tucker skates over the blue line, and right after Martin Brodeur deflects his shot over the glass into the crowd, Scott Stevens checks him into the boards hard. Tucker falls to the ice in a heap. TSN goes to a commercial.
That was Adam Giles reading his story, Headache. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1328. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Arnie Ackman recorded Adam Giles reading his stories, and Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen.